Welcome to the Australia Sews podcast. This podcast celebrates the Australian home sewing community and shares stories from everyday sewers transforming their lives and their wardrobes. My name is Louise Sherry. My guest today is Shelley Gibb. You'll see her posting regularly on Instagram as Molly Molly. A few years ago, Shelley was looking for a creative outlet outside of sewing, so she took a course in surface design. Little did she know at the time that people would be interested in buying her fabric. So she set up an online store called Molly Molly Fabric and releases small amounts of fabric every now and then, so keep your eyes peeled. Today we talk about designing fabric and clothing labels, drafting your own body blocks, and Shelley's bright and fun clothing style. And if you've ever felt like an imposter or are looking for a new creative outlet which is very different from your day job, you may also relate to Shelley's story. Take it away, Shelley. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Shelley. Before we get stuck in, can you tell our listeners what you're wearing today?
Yes, I'm wearing a pair of wide leg pants that I drafted myself and a very heavily hacked LB pullover, which is a wardrobe staple.
So you're the creator and designer behind Molly Molly Fabric, and we're definitely going to talk about that and lots of other things. But first, I'd love to hear your story about why you started sewing your own clothes.
Yeah, so I've always been quite small and I like things to fit. So before I moved to Melbourne, I had a tailor and I had a really good relationship with her. So I'd been seeing her for about 10 years and pretty much everything I bought had, I now understand what those adjustments are, wow. But they had adjustments made to them to fit me just because I'm quite particular and I'm quite petite. When I moved to Melbourne, I had a bit of trouble finding a tailor that I could have quite the same relationship with. And I realized that there was a return on investment that was to be made for doing some very basic alterations myself. And I calculated that and realized that I could pay for the sewing machine, you know, within probably a matter of months. And then at some point, I got more ambitious with my alterations and started to make my own clothes. I started with some vintage Big Four patterns. They didn't fit, no surprise to anyone. They have a lot of ease in them. And I was so determined to have a pair of pants that fit, which is how all of this pants making thing started. I spent 4 hours on a crotch one day and I actually went and learned to draft my own pants block as a result of that. And then from then there was no stopping me and I reverted back to indie patterns and found things that fit and found things I'm really happy with. And they complement my very well-loved pants block.
So the Big Four you were saying were just not right for you. So were you having to make a lot of adjustments then?
Yeah, I was having to make a lot of adjustments, and back then I didn't know how to read a pattern and measure it and see whether it would fit me. So, you know, like many people, I'd make it up. And I think I was listening to Sarah on your podcast with a similar story a few weeks ago of I'd make it up and realize that it was well and truly too big, even though I was technically the measurements on the pattern that I'd read at the back of it. Yeah.
So about 5 years ago, I think you took a pattern making class in Melbourne at the Council of Adult Education. So that's where you learned how to draft blocks for a skirt, trousers and a bodice using your own body measurements. Is that right?
Yes. And pants as well.
And pants. And that course still exists today.
That's fabulous because it was really, really good. And I really liked Jenny because she, I mean, like while she was technical, she had a bit of a do what you feel sort of approach over the top of it. So she would explain what the rule was and then she'd explain how you could potentially break that rule, I guess, would be a way of putting it. And that was fantastic.
So you did that course because of the frustration you were getting with the Big Four and just everyday wear?
Yeah.
Were you amazed then at creating these blocks, how many different types of things you could actually make with it?
Yeah, it was. And it was really cool. And from that, I went to Thread Den and I did another course, which was all about manipulating those blocks. And then I bought one of the textbooks, which I think they use in the TAFEs. So, you know, basically where people learn industry things.
That's Helen Armstrong's Pattern Making for Fashion Design. Is that the one?
Yeah, that's the one. And that sort of taught me all about further than what the course did, which was also excellent. That taught me what I could do. So I could refer to that when I was trying to figure out what I wanted something to look like and what I might do to it. So the wide leg pants that I'm wearing today, I learned to make the block. But I used that book to understand what I would do to make them the wide leg pants that they are, not the sort of, nice elegant trouser that I'd originally created.
Okay, so for anyone that doesn't understand what a block is, can you explain as simple as you can?
I might be getting this wrong. My understanding of it is that it's the very most basic sort of pattern that is generic and it fits your body. And that's something that it sort of fits you quite tightly, and you can manipulate that by adding ease to adjust the style so that it would fit you in a way that you would like. So, sorry, not just ease, but you can adjust like the design lines in it and things like that. So,
So, for
that's,
example, the bodice, so you'd
yeah.
measure your neck, you'd measure your bust, you'd measure your underbust, you'd measure your waist, and you'd kind of create this, I guess, outline of your body.
Yeah, it's like the master pattern. So, my blocks are made from cardboard, and when I make up something in calico for them, they fit my body quite tightly. So I would never go smaller than my block unless I was doing something a bit odd, just because that would give me negative ease, which in a woven fabric would mean it's too small. So the block is like this super tightly, perfectly fitted sort of thing. It would be a bit too high in the neck, a bit too high under the arms if I were to make it as it is, but I can make a pattern from it.
So, are there darts in these blocks or are they
Yes.
dartless? There are darts.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, when you did that, the blocks, were you happy with the crotch curve that finally came out of that block, or did you then still have a lot of anguish about getting that crotch curve right?
I had a little anguish. So one of the things that's a challenge for me in terms of fitting is I actually like I'm quite small, but I don't have a flat stomach, and a lot of women don't. Like, that's totally okay. But what that means sometimes is that when pants are drafted to be really tight across that area, it just doesn't look the way that I wanted it to look. So I shared the journey as I was getting my block to fit a bit better. On Instagram, and Leila Sows of Moonit and Broad actually reached out and gave me a bit of advice. She was really helpful. To this day, I'm so grateful that she took the time and was kind enough to explain what was happening and what might help it. So my crotch curve is ever so slightly scooped compared to what it was when I had done it in class, and that's probably a fit preference, but it's just how I feel a bit more comfortable.
It's like hitting the jackpot when you nail that crotch curve. But have you noticed
Yes.
too, it also depends on the whether it's woven or knit. So the crotch curve can be is slightly different, and especially the different types of material that you make your garment out of, it's going to impact that crotch curve too. So there's not one size fits all with that crotch curve.
Very much. I think you need to have an understanding of how the material that you're using is going to behave and accommodate for that.
So then, are the blocks made for wovens, or can you adapt them for knits and wovens?
The blocks that I have made for wovens, I do have a stretch shirt block, which I use nearly as extensively as my pants, especially for all of my like long sleeve winter clothing. I'd be a bit lost without it. I love it.
And when you put those two blocks side by side, they do look different, don't they? Because one's obviously made for knits, so you're not going to need so much ease, and the other one is obviously bigger.
Yeah. So my stretch one is, it's a little bit smaller. I've done a few things just to adjust it to my fit preference. So it actually has a little bit more exaggeration from the waist to the hip than what I do, just because of the way that I wanted it to fit. And it obviously has no darts. So if you stick one over the other, yes, the woven block looks a bit bigger. They both have squared shoulders and a forward shoulder adjustment on them compared to what you'd see on many of the regular patterns. So the way I use my blocks most of the time these days, honestly, though, is I actually use them as a reference for when I'm looking at to sew a new pattern to understand how that's different to my shape and the sort of adjustments that I might make. It means that when I twirl things, if I twirl things, I'm more likely to get something that's a little bit closer to what I'm looking for.
That's really interesting because you might look at your waist on your block and the waist that they've selected for the pattern and go, oh, there's actually quite a big difference there. So you get a really good indication of where you might need to adjust that pattern.
Yeah, and I can see that I don't often need too many adjustments in the torso. It depends on how tall the indie pattern, sort of person they've done it for is. But yeah, I can look at where my waistline is and where the pattern one is and know whether I need to shorten it. I'm never going to need to lengthen it. And similarly with the pants, I can understand like what's going on with the waist and the hip and why something may or may not fit.
So I was going to ask you, how often Are you doing something sewing related, whether it's actual sewing, designing fabric, thinking about sewing, cutting out fabric?
Thinking about sewing, it's kind of always in the back of my mind. I try to make a little bit of space for it most evenings, and usually, probably one day on the weekend, or maybe both if I'm lucky. I don't watch much TV. I do listen to quite a few podcasts and things like that. So it's sort of my go-to when I want to relax and power down.
Can we talk about your style? Because your clothes are so wonderfully bright, colourful, and fun. How would you describe your style?
It's a good question. I wear what makes me feel comfortable and happy, and I dress for the mood that I want to be in. So I'd say it's probably fairly practical. So you'll rarely find me in high heels because I want to be running around somewhere probably. And my clothing usually has like pockets and space to move. And because I live in Melbourne where the weather's very changeable, there's usually layers or the possibility of layering involved.
Plus, you have a dog now, so high heels are not practical for either them chewing high heels or you walking outside in high heels.
Yeah, I live next to a park that we love walking in together. I could imagine that stilettos could sink into the grass. Yes.
Know gold is one of your favourite colours to wear. What do you love about gold?
So I like it because I mean it matches my skin tone, so there's that benefit, but there's something kind of ostentatious about it in a really nice, joyful way. Like you can't really top gold. So if I'm wearing, like, I've got a gold skirt that I wear and I love it. And it's just, it is what it is. It's out there. It's proud.
It's
It's just
cool.
being its thing. Like, it's just happy. And it goes with, well, I think it can go with like nearly anything. So,
What other colours are your favourites right now?
right now, gold, I've discovered a shade of mauve that I can wear, which is really nice. And if I look at it on the color spectrum, I'm pretty sure it has a like, opposing relationship to gold as well. So it's like a sort of a warmer toned purple. I
I
really
think you
like
made that
peach.
too, didn't you? You picked that colour, didn't
Yeah,
you?
I did.
You went through
I
all the
picked it.
purples and said, "This
I
one's for me."
actually did. I have like one of the Pantone color books, and I looked through them all and found this warmer tone and went, aha, I can wear that. And then I made a pattern with it, which is actually the pants I'm wearing today are that color, and realized that it does work. And then I got really excited recently because I saw a fabric that color in a shop,
Oh.
and I purchased it and made an Olya shirt out of it, which is excellent.
And you're like, I searched high and low for this purple, and now suddenly it's in my face in the shop.
Yeah, it was definitely a good moment. Yellow is also my favorite, which is kind of what gold is. Like gold is metallic yellow, really.
Yellow's cool. So let's talk about fabric design. In January 2021, you opened an online fabric shop called Molly Molly Fabric. I believe it was January, it was right after Christmas, with your own fabric designs, and everything you put on your website sold out in the first week, which is amazing. What spurred you on to finally take that leap and start your small fabric design business?
So it really was just a hobby. I went and did a short course with three other people. It was run by Surface 122. So that's Emily Willis. I'm not sure that she's running any courses at the moment, unfortunately. And everyone in the class seemed to be some sort of a professional creative. And I just wanted to go because I had an office job. I was burnt out. I was really, really stressed. And I wanted something to divert my attention. And I remember sitting in the class and thinking, oh, all of these people want to make a business out of this. And I'm just here to play. I'm just here being me. And I kept on just sort of doing it in the background as a bit of a hobby. And I'd share my process in my stories. And people were asking me if I was willing to sell the fabric. It wasn't really something that I'd entertained. And at the time, I was still quite busy at work. And I was printing it locally at Next State Print, who I was recommended to by Emily. And they've been fantastic. And at some point, I wanted cotton sateen, a really lightweight cotton sateen, and I couldn't find anyone in Australia that would print it for me. It's a little harder to print on than some of the other sort of, more stiff fabrics, I think. Anyway, the only way that I could get it was getting a minimum order, which is a bit larger than what I'd be able to make for myself. And so I sort of toyed with it for a while, and I'm like, nah, I'm gonna do it. People have been asking. Hopefully someone will buy it. So I found a supplier. I, went through the process of getting test prints and coloring things and all of the stuff that I had been taught how to do. And then I made a site. I didn't know how to make a website or configure a website, so it was all a big lesson. And yeah, I put it up hoping that I'd sort of, sell some of it, and it was really popular. So it was amazing. And it was the start of, I think, probably sort of finding a bit of a better balance in my life and finding some things that would help balance work and fill my life out a bit in terms of just, having things to be really excited about every day and having something that I could be proud of and something that I had a bit of agency over. So
It's interesting that a lot of us suffer from imposter syndrome where we think, well, I'm not a fabric designer because I just have a little shop and I only do this as a hobby. But that's what you're doing. You're actually doing it. You're creating the fabric. You're designing the fabric, choosing what kind of fabric you want it to be printed on, and you're selling it. That must be like an amazing feeling.
it is. It's really cool. And I get to do it at my own pace. I'm very slow. I'm very manual. I do things by hand. I use Photoshop rather than Illustrator, just by personal preference. Many people use different programs. I occasionally draw in something called Procreate. I still struggle with calling myself a fabric designer because I don't have a lot of those sort of technical skills. But I guess what I have is, if I've got an idea, I'm really willing to experiment and see how I can execute it, and I'm willing to play. And a lot of the stuff that I do, I guess it's because my palette is a little bit more simple, but I still like those sort of joyful colors. And so a lot of what I create is more simplistic because that's my preference for what I want to wear. So a lot of it, I think, is about having the idea and being able to execute the idea the way that's in my mind rather than being able to make the most amazing, really sort of, complex illustration, which I have a huge amount of respect for. It's also not necessarily something that I'd be able to do anytime soon. So I've got a bit of a different niche, I think.
So how does the course work? What do you actually learn to do?
I really, really liked the way that Em taught the course because she taught us how to think before she taught us how to use the tools. And that really appealed to me and my sort of analytical nature. So she spoke with us about observing what was around us and finding inspiration. She spoke with us about how to select and choose color palettes. She also spoke about how you can create what they call a repeat tile. So for those who see my stories, you'll notice that I talk about creating what they call a half drop repeat. So imagine you're looking at a brick wall and you can see that the bricks aren't arranged necessarily in a square or a rectangular on top of a rectangular sort of shape, like bathroom tiles. They're arranged so that you've got half a brick overlapping. I'm not sure how to explain that very well, but yeah, I learned sort of how to put a repeat together that is, going to look good. And then applying that to what looks good on my clothing and what works for clothing compared to if I was making a mobile phone case or a bed sheet or whatever. Yeah, I sort of learned the basics in Em's class, and then when you make your own fabric and you put it on, when it doesn't work because the repeat doesn't look very good, you learn pretty quickly
Wow.
how to adjust and how to make things look a bit better when you're wearing them.
So how do you get it from the computer that you've just finished designing onto a piece of fabric?
So I save it as usually a JPEG file with the right settings in the background, and I send it off to the printer and I say, "Can you make this for me?" It's actually that is. The actual sending of the file is probably the easiest part. You do need to make sure that the colors that are on your screen are the colors that are representing what you would like when you choose the fabric. So different fabrics behave different ways in terms of how they take color on. Every printer has their machines calibrated a little bit differently. So what I print locally, because I still try to print some of my stuff locally compared to what I'd print with my supplier in China. My actual files that I send would look slightly differently because the printers in Melbourne are a little bit different to the printers in China, just the way they've got them set up and the type of fabric that I'm usually sending through each of them.
And your inspiration for your designs come from so many different things. There was one I was reading on your Instagram where you were inspired by your family's beach house.
Yes.
Do you remember that one?
I do. It's called Beach Blocks. And yeah, I was noticing all of the basically they're decorative bricks that you see usually in fences and things like that, often in more tropical climates. and they're designed so that you can have a little bit of privacy, but they can let the wind through. And yeah, just sort of walking around up there, and I'd see all of these really interesting repeat patterns on these bricks. And I realized as I was sitting there one afternoon and scribbling that actually it made a really cool print if I put them all together. So it was one of those sort of what if moments of, oh, what if I put all of the breeze blocks together? I wonder what that would look like. And that's how I came up with the print.
And how do you come up with other ideas? So, for example, I know you made a lips one which you weren't fully happy with. I don't know if you ended up selling that fabric or not, but did you look
No,
at
I didn't.
someone with red lipstick? Did you look at yourself with red lipstick and go, oh, that could make a very unique design?
That one happened because it was the start of lockdown, and I noticed that it came from a bit of a weird place. I used to spend about 6 hours a day on calls every day, especially through the first sort of year of lockdown here in Melbourne. And it was funny just watching what was coming out of my head at the end of each day. I was sitting there drawing, and I kept drawing eyes and lips because all I was seeing every day was heads on a screen. And then at the same time as that, I was watching a lot of the Golden Girls, and I really love the color palettes in the Golden Girls. Whoever was putting together the costume design would arrange the ladies' outfits so that they complemented each other. It was amazing. And somewhere through that, I picked up that peach color that's on the couch of the Golden Girls, and I realized that this weird scribbly lip drawing that I had, I was coloring it in on my iPad while I was watching the Golden Girls, and then I created this print. I mean, it was cute and all, but ultimately I couldn't see myself wearing it. And if I can't see myself wearing something, it's not really something that I necessarily want to sell or share. So I loved it. I loved the process of it, but not everything's a winner, or it can be a winner in a different way, and it just leads to another place, another time.
So, do you have a favorite or a couple of favorites that you've just really loved and just so proud of?
I think my favorite, it really depends on what mood I'm in. I think my favorite at the moment is probably the end of the rainbow print, which is a bunch of different shapes basically that are all arranged together, and they have little spaces between them. And I guess the reason that it's my favorite is because it's just got a bit of a longer story to tell. So it started off with someone saying, could you design a print, just draw some shapes? And I didn't know how. I had no idea what to do. And it just sort of stuck with me, and I guess marinated for quite a long time. And when I made the thank you cards for people, because most of my thank you cards are handmade, for the first fabric release, I drew shapes, and I just stuck them on a piece of paper as collage. And then somewhere between all of that, yeah, I sort of just kept playing with it and iterating. That's actually the fourth iteration of that print. And if I said it took a year to make, it sounds really dramatic and like I'd spend so much time and energy on it. But actually, it just every so often I'd just come back and revisit it, and just sort of it really tracked the evolution of where I was and how my skills are developing over time.
If you hashtag Molly Molly Fabric on Instagram, you'll see all the different people that have made clothes from your fabric. Do you still get a buzz looking at that?
Yes, it's actually one of the nicest and most empowering things. So, I do hurt, like, it is a small business, and I guess I could probably say, oh, I make a tiny bit of money off it. But actually, what's worth way more than any of that to me is seeing someone make a piece of clothing out of something that's come out of my head. It's the most amazing feeling. I don't really know how to describe it, but it's some sort of magic. It's nothing that I ever imagined for myself. And I feel really privileged that people would spend so much like time and energy making something that's come from me. Like that's really special.
Yeah. And what kind of fabrics now have you experimented with printing your designs on?
I've printed on quite a few things over time. So I've played with swimwear, canvas, medium to heavyweight twill. I've
French
used
Terry.
jersey. Yep, French terry. Yeah, so I guess it's sort of having a bit of an understanding as to what a print might look like on different sort of bases and what might be suitable for what. The ones that I prefer are a lightweight or a medium weight cotton. And I am about to print on some jersey just locally at Next State for me, so that I can make a shirt for my dog.
Is it expensive to make your own fabric as opposed to just walking to a shop and buying fabric?
It's not too dissimilar. So if you were to make it for just yourself and you used somewhere local, It's probably similar to buying like some really nice linen at somewhere like, I'm just thinking of something people might relate to, like the fabric store or something like that. It's more that it takes time and it can take a little bit of experimentation. So, having the idea, drawing it up, making sure that you get your repeat to work from a technical perspective, meaning that all of your tiles all join together properly. And then making sure that that's going to look good on a piece of clothing, that's the stuff that takes time. The sending it off to the printer, that's just the really exciting reward at the end of it all.
In July, you announced your fabric was now available to buy in France. Is that right?
Yeah,
What
it was
the?
another one of those moments of, oh, I don't feel like I'm ready for the longest time. And so I sort of didn't really want to go down the wholesale path because I was worried I was going to fail. And I had a bit of a talk with myself, and yeah, when the offer came through, I thought, well, instead of saying how might this not work and what could go wrong, I'm already well across those things. I already understand the risks of that. How about looking at how it might work and what I could do to make it happen? So Manon contacted me via Instagram and just asked if I'd be interested in wholesaling. But the way she put it was very, very good because she asked if I'd be willing to sell a few meters of my fabric. And so instead of getting me being quite alarmed, I was like, oh, yeah, look, I can probably give you a discount if you want to, order like, 20 meters or something like that, whatever. And then she actually wanted to put a wholesale order through. And I went, okay, well.
Did you have the design? Did she want a specific design? Or what? Sorry, what's Manon?
Manon is the owner of Cocoule, the place that is in France that's stocking my fabric. So it's an
Cool.
online fabric store. And when I had a look into it, I am being kept very good company. So she stocks like Lady McElroy, some of the Nerida Hanson prints. I think there's some Merchant and Mills in there. I could be wrong, but like we're talking about like, the real fabric suppliers.
Oh, here we go again, Shelley.
It's the imposter syndrome. Yeah, so but I'm honestly like I'm in there like keeping good company with some really beautiful fabrics and some really beautiful designs, which is just lovely. So, yeah.
Wow. How many meters did she ask for, and did you have to make new designs from scratch?
I'm not sure that I can tell you how many meters she asked for. It just might
Okay.
be sensitive
It's all right.
information. It was a
Enough.
lot. It was enough to make me realize that I probably needed to sort of think about what I was doing though. She asked for designs from my back catalogue, which made it really
Wow.
easy because I already know that those designs work. I know how the colours in the files print. So I was able to work with my supplier basically to, make it happen the way that it needed to happen, which was really good.
Were you pulling off French vibes there? Were you photographed with a baguette and a cool little bike or
No,
something? Like
I feel like my fabric has travelled the world far more than I have at this point. It's really cool to see where it ends up. It's really exciting. Yeah, I love seeing where all the parcels go.
where do they go?
There's quite a few people who support me in Australia, which is amazing. And some of those names I recognise when they come up again. There's quite a few people in the States. I also posted some labels to Finland the other day, and I'm still kind of excited about that. I hope that
Was
hopefully the
it your
lady that
fart
ordered
ones?
them. No, she didn't order the farts. She ordered some others, but like Finland has the best chocolate, and I never imagined anything that I've created going all the way to Finland. Like
Wow.
that's really, really cool.
Wow. So in 2021, you started making your first lot of labels, and a lot of them have like beautiful thoughts on them. One of them has your face on it with the words that I cannot repeat, but I'll try. I'll just bleep it out. I am a effing boss.
Yes.
Is there a story behind that one?
Yeah, there's a story behind all of them. So basically every like when I'm creating designs, I'm usually sort of working over something. I'm quite introspective. And I realized that because I've got a wall sitting right behind me now, actually, which has, all of my ideas on it. And I've got a few quotes on there from, things where I've been like working through in sort of therapy for the last year. And it's just things that help me live my life a bit better to help me reframe myself. And I realized that having those words next to these little images was actually really quite helpful. And so usually the labels are the story of the print, but I was faced with going back to the office after working remotely for, I think at that point it was 2.5 years. And most of my colleagues in the job I'm in now, they actually had been in and out. I hadn't, because I'd had a different sort of situation. And so I had all of those thoughts that I think most people do, of like, will I fit in? Do I look the same on the screen as I do in person? I'm aware that I'm quite small and retiring in reality, but on video calls, I can, be quite, I can look like I'm quite confident and probably a bit bigger than I
You can puff your
am.
chest out.
Yeah, I can puff my chest out, and no one can see the little legs that are sitting underneath it. And yeah, I was, sort of just doing my scribbles and whatever. And yeah, that label popped out, basically as just a little drawing of me trying to amp myself up, going, I can do this. And I'm like, yep, well, I can't wear all of those big bold prints that I really love on the outside, in that environment, but I can wear a label. I can wear something on the inside. I can be confident on the inside. And so, yeah, the I'm a bleeping boss, with my face on it
With your
is,
stunned face.
yeah, with my stunned face, was, yeah, a bit of a sort of a joke with myself. And the other ones are like, you've got this, which is something I say to myself a lot when I'm like, can I don't know, and I can be quite unsure. Yeah. And Make Lemonade is actually all about something that I've been learning to do, which is just deal with the situation as it arises, deal with what's in front of you, and that's the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between. And so yeah, they're all sort of reminders to me to just sort of, just help pep me up.
Where does the fart ones come from?
Farts are from me just making a joke with my partner, because he was saying he wanted me to make him something, and I'm like, if I'm making it for you, it's going to have farts written inside it. And then I had a bit too much time on my hand, the joke went too far, and I actually made the labels for real.
One night when you were sipping too many wines.
Actually, it was after a hard day of work, and I kept getting him to come down and like look at my monitor and say, look at this, what do you think? And eventually it just got the better of me, and I sent it off to production.
And it's in like caps too.
Oh yeah, like
It's
I,
not
when
subtle.
I did it deliberately. So I had a lot of thought about this font, right? Because I wanted it to have movement. So it's in italics, and I wanted it to have a bit of emphasis, so it's got a shadow behind it. Yeah, it's really representative of the mood.
So your partner is his name Sanka? Sanka?
Yes, Sankar.
You also refer to him as the overachiever. And he's also
Yes.
your official photographer. And sometimes he likes to wear your clothes, your homemade clothes.
Yes.
Is he your number one fan, though?
He was telling me this morning that he's my number one fan.
Oh, serious.
yeah, he's very, very supportive. He often tells me that I have imposter syndrome, and will tell people that I make my own clothes and that I'm a fabric designer, and I'm mortified by that. Chuffed for sure, like, but a bit mortified. Yeah, he's definitely my cheerleader.
And why do you call him the overachiever?
I call him the overachiever because he, see, I guess, a sign of love. So
Yes.
he seems to be amazing at everything. He's very, very smart. He works hard. He's very creative. So he, while I'm downstairs sewing, he's usually upstairs making music. And so we'll sort of run between our two spaces, and he'll be like, "What do you think of this?" and play me something, and I'll come upstairs and ask him about the fit of something or show him something that I'm drawing. So the overachiever comes from just sort of
Being great
that,
at
like,
everything, and
being great at everything,
I
and I just
hate
want to
those
elbow him in
people.
the. Yeah, I do. Totally.
I wanted to ask you this question at the very, very beginning, so I'm going to ask it to you now. It was meant to be my first question. I don't know how I missed it.
Sure.
I'm going to try my hardest not to call you Molly throughout this interview because your Instagram name is Molly Molly, but your real name is Shelley. So do a lot of people
Yes.
call you Molly?
A lot of people call me Molly, to the extent that I have a friend who's also called Shelley. So the lady who I print. Get my stuff, my patterns printed from. So plan make do. She's Shelly, and she calls me Molly Molly. I actually had a conversation with her last week because I sent her something in the post, and I was like, how do I address this as someone from? And so I addressed it from, in inverted commas, the other Shelly, and she had a chuckle. And I caught up with her. I'm like, well, I call you the other Shelly. What do you call me? So the reason I'm called Molly Molly is because my nickname for a long time has been Molly. And many, many moons ago, when I started the Instagram account with no, sort of idea about what I was going to do with it, Molly was taken. Molly Molly was also taken, as was Molly Molly Molly. Molly Molly with underscores between the letters, which I never thought I'd have to say out loud to anyone. That wasn't taken. So that's why I'm Molly Molly.
Wow. And have you given up trying to correct people now?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Like it's been that way for a long time, and I'll answer to both. It's good.
Will you consider changing your name by deed poll to Molly? Just to make life easier for yourself.
Could work.
So we all know Instagram obviously shows the highlight reel of our lives, but it's not all sunshine and roses. So you do talk a lot about the importance of self-care and just simple pleasures to nourish yourself.
Yep.
Especially with Melbourne being the most locked down city in the world, that must have been horrendous for you. Even as an introvert, it must have been horrendous. So why is self-care so important, and what do you do then to help with your self-care?
I think self-care is important for me because it helps me be, I guess, probably just the more exuberant and happier version of myself. So I have at times been, you know, quite anxious and had, you know, low self-esteem, I think as many of us have. So, you know, there's, you know, nothing that's not particularly universal in that response. And I think just sort of the way that I've developed coping mechanisms to manage that has been just to enjoy just those small, simple things and to be really grateful for, you know, what's around me and what I have. And yeah, I really try to amplify that. And in addition to that, yeah, I guess I do sort of, you know, with things that are particular to me, I really do try to work on that. You know, I'm quite deliberate in the way that I arrange my life and what I prioritize and who I prioritize, just because I think that's just sort of a better way of being, and it's a better way for me to show up for other people so that I can, you know, be there as well.
And you can tell, like, you're very big on gratitude and kindness as well, and giving back and paying back.
Yes. Yeah, I think one of the nicest, it's actually really selfish, one of the nicest things I can do for myself is to do something for someone else.
Are you ready for the quiz?
Sure.
We've reached the end. So with the quiz, you have to answer in one word or one sentence. And I've obviously stalked your Instagram, so you'll see some things in here from that. Earlier this year, you got a greyhound called Delilah. Since then, you've made Delilah and yourself matching outfits. But what about the overachiever? Did you run out of fabric?
Well, the beautiful lime green fabric isn't really his colour.
He could pull it off. Come on, he's the overachiever.
Exactly. He can pull off anything. He has requested that I make him and her matching jumpers. So we might have a family photo next winter. We'll see.
So you're saying for you, him and Delilah, you'll all have matching outfits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what I'd like.
That's the dream.
Yep.
In 2017, while visiting the IKEA Museum in Sweden, you wore the very first dress you ever made. I think it was the first one, which happened to be made out of fabric from IKEA. I didn't even know IKEA sold fabric. Can you describe this fabric for our listeners?
Yes. I was actually super excited about being able to wear the IKEA dress to the IKEA Museum, to the IKEA fabric exhibition, actually. So it's a photo of logs cut at the end. So it's like, I guess, sort of circular-ish patterns of a cross-section of a tree. And it's in browns and blacks.
And is it an actual fabric for making clothes, or was it more of an upholstery fabric?
I'm certain it's an upholstery fabric, but baby sewer Shelley didn't know differently. And I'm just going to own it. It's great.
Wow. Do you actually go to IKEA to buy fabric?
Oh, yeah. I remember that trip that I went there. I took a friend with me and everything. And, yeah, I mean, the dress, it's a bit stiff, but it's just really happy and cool.
So you said that one of your favourite 80s shows on TV was The Golden Girls. Are you a fan of 80s fashion, is my question.
Yes, absolutely I am. I really like a lot of the design lines and the energy, and I think it reflects, you know, some of the sort of bigger ideas and enthusiasm that was about in the 80s. And you can see that with the, you know, the shoulder pads and the big excessive pockets and, you know, these sort of bold colour palettes.
Do you have a favourite Golden Girl? Not for fashion, just for laughs. I actually like
I do,
Dorothy.
yeah, I do like Dorothy. I really like Dorothy's shirt game, actually. The collars on her shirts are brilliant. I love the colors that Blanche wears as well.
True or false, did you once say this? To pass the test of something you've made, you need to be able to breathe and perform all the moves to YMCA comfortably.
Yes, I was talking about making a stretch shirt with my stretch pattern block. And yes, you absolutely have to be able to live life and pull some sweet dance moves in your clothing.
Even for wovens, not just stretch,
Oh,
for
even
all.
for wovens. Yeah, definitely. I don't want to be like ripping a shoulder seam while I'm, enthusiastically driving my car listening to the 90s retro station.
True or false, did you once say this? The colour yellow is just gold without sparkles.
If I didn't, I should have.
You said it.
Yeah, that sounds great. It's very true.
I know you love pizza, so what is your favourite type?
I love all sorts of pizza. There's a pizza called, and I can only say this with an Australian accent, Boonie. So David Boone, the cricketer. Anyway, there's a ham and pineapple pizza, which is generally not my thing. But just the quality of the ingredients they use and some special sauce in there, and probably the fact that it's called Boonie and it's available up the road, I've got a real soft spot for it.
Wow, converted to pineapple. I
I
wonder
know,
if,
I would never have thought.
I don't know if that's an Australian thing or not. I don't know. I need to Google it now.
I'm pretty sure there are some overseas listeners that are going to be pretty horrified. And if you asked me before I'd discovered the Boonie pizza myself, I would have been horrified too. But it just brings me a bit of joy.
Last question. In 2020, you couldn't visit your family at Christmas due to COVID. So you made them some tea towels with you printed all over them, and you also made your sister later a bucket hat in the same fabric. Would you
Yep.
ever wear little Shelleys as a garment?
I've been asked that before. No, not on the outside. I think that might be a little bit weird, but at the same time, it's really funny. I'd wear it if it had people I love on it. So if it had
Oh.
not me, but my friends and people I care about, and it was a cute little sort of illustration set, I'd wear it with pride. Yeah.
Wow, that's lovely. Well, thank you, Shelley, for coming on the podcast and being such an inspiration.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Australia Sews podcast. If you know someone from Australia who would be great to have on the show, email australiasewspodcast@gmail.com or send me a message on Instagram at australiasews_podcast. You are more than welcome to nominate yourself. You can also find me on Instagram at make_thrift_sew. Now, back to sewing.